to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 861. I am Lisa Sheps, as I am on Days Below Zero, and I am joined by my fruitful co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello. I don't think you've ever called me fruitful before in all these years.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org.
Hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
Finding treasure. It is Wednesday, January 28th, 2026. On the show today, we have Austin Opera and their production of Fiddler on the Roof. Later on, we're going to be talking to Austin Playhouse and their show, Describe the Night. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, San Juan, Puerto Rico, and Lubbock, Texas. Stick around.
One so fair.
Okay, this is a really beautiful song.
It is.
It is from Ragtime.
I know.
Everybody's talking about it. Yes. Because, well, for a lot of reasons.
I was like, multiple.
It's supposed to be really very good. I have not seen it, this production. But they just released the show, the cast album, which is what we were just listening to.
Yes.
It's all over TikTok.
Pretty.
It is.
The music in that's really pretty.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. There were so many things I wanted to play from it, but that's the one I chose.
That's okay.
Our children. It's pretty.
Yeah. I don't think you could have gone wrong with any of your choices.
Checking in with you. How are you? How'd you fare the Icepocalypse 26?
I mean, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm cold. I'm still cold. Oh. We're getting more cold. You like the cold.
I do like the cold.
Yeah, I think it's a four-letter word that we shouldn't be allowed to say on air. It's that bad. Same with snow.
Okay. Well, we like... Well, okay. You know what happens when you say snow.
Snow.
Why don't we introduce the folks that are sitting with
us? Yes, we have people with us.
We do. We have Stephen Skybell. Hi, Stephen.
Hello.
Crystal, you know what? I forgot to check the pronunciation of your last name. So here we go. We're going to try this, and you say tell me how bad it is. Crystal Manish.
Manish,
Manish, with a little ch.
Yeah.
We also have Daniel Acosta, who's over there. Say hello.
Hello.
Yep. Didn't think he was going to be on microphone, and then I tricked him.
I told him he could be on mic. He's like, no, that's okay. And I'm like, no.
Yep.
No, sit right here.
Yep. I have to start the show right off the bat by saying the opinions expressed on Offstage and on the Air are not necessarily those of this station, its underwriters, its volunteers, staff, or anybody else.
Board of directors,
any of those people. It's just mine.
Just the people here.
And so I just need to start. We're not going to talk about this because it's not in our bailiwick, but I just want to reach out and acknowledge bailiwick.
Yeah, another good use of words tonight.
acknowledge those folks in Minneapolis that are dealing with just some horrendous things going on currently, and this weekend was just awful. And so I stand in solidarity with them, and haven't been a big fan of the way we've been handling this deportation issue, and now I'm really not a fan. So I just want to reach out and say that my heart is with them.
I hear you.
Yeah, and with us.
Yes.
That's it. Anybody else? Want to say anything? You don't have to. I just want to say it. Anyway, keeping that disclaimer in mind, there was an interesting thing that happened in, oh God, what town was it in? And I, of course, don't have it up here.
Do you know what state?
No.
Oh.
I'm about to, I think I want to say Pennsylvania. No, Colorado. Of course it's in Colorado. Oh, my God, where is the theater company? Oh, it's a Sasquatch Productions at the Pace Theater Company had a production of Shrek. And in the song Freak Flag, they flew a la, what's that show?
Les Mis.
A la Les Mis, thank you. They flew the Pride flags. And the city of Colorado informed them that they had some complaints. The theater had some complaints that there was a Pride flag, and they were told they couldn't do that Pride flag. So the cast did something that I berate others for doing.
Wait a minute. Do they get funding from the city? How can the city tell an organization?
The city didn't tell them. It was the company.
Oh, the board of directors people.
The company got a complaint about it.
So I was like, wait, hold on.
Let me finish.
Okay.
So they did something that I get mad at people for doing, which is they broke the fourth wall. They stopped the show and they said this.
We're going to hold really quick. I know this is really unprecedented to do this in the middle of the show. But Colin, we're going to hold for a second. And I'm breaking the fourth wall right now. A little awkward. Hey, Gingy. But we all feel this is a risk that is important to take tonight to share with you, our audience, because something has happened before the show. We were told when we arrived here that in our next number that you're about to see, that we could not fly the flags that we rehearsed and were approved. Because they were offensive to people at opening weekend last weekend. So I encourage you at this portion, you got your phone, just to, if you want to share this, as we do the song, probably not. But we met at intermission and decided in solidarity together that it must happen tonight, that we must still fly these flags. It is our heartbeat, and this show is about that. The message that in this that you're witnessing today is about inclusion. It is about community and loving your neighbor, no matter what they look like or how they identify. But we respectfully, as a cast, and peacefully, and with fire in our eyes, protest this request. And this is our protest. And we resist. We resist this. This is the Cats of Shrek musical. And thank you so much. We will continue the show.
I'm very proud of them. Nodding doesn't work on the radio.
It's very moving. It's a moving thing. It's what theater really can accomplish that a lot of other things can't. And good for them for defying the orders from their company.
Good for them too. And as I looked at this, I saw this is a video that I recorded. This was not a small production. It was a very large production in a multi-thousand seat house.
I was just about to say, do you know how large the house
it
was?
It seemed to be full. And this is Parker Arts. And they, the representative of the towns of Parker did tell the Parker Arts people to cut it. And it sounds like that this was a surprise to, like, the stage manager did not know this was going to happen. Because it seemed like she apologized to someone. I take that as it was probably the stage manager. Sorry to stop your show. But good for them.
Yeah. I wonder, was there fallout after that?
That's what I was just about to
I wondered that as well. I did not see any. I did not see any news articles after that. I looked at it since it was such a large show. I thought, is there a national tour going on? But no, this is an organization called Sasquatch Productions. And Kelly McAllister, who directed it, she said, I blocked it with pride flags because that's what I think this song is about. It's about acceptance, who we are. To me, the rainbow flag is not a political flag. It is a flag of inclusion, love, joy, and hope. I was dismayed and shocked that the people were so blanking angry. I almost read that word about the beautiful moment in our show that I'm very proud of. So when I looked at this, I got a little teary-eyed.
That's awesome sauce.
I mean, amazing. I normally get really angry when actors stop the show to do stuff. But I applaud them in this case.
Yeah.
Anybody disagree with me?
Apparently that many people couldn't have been bothered. It was just a small amount of people with large voices because no one was upset when that happened, but they were upset the night before. So, you know, make it make sense.
Exactly.
What is up and down is down.
Yeah. And this is the unfortunate part about some of our people in charge in a lot of different things where a few very loud voices say something that is bigoted and hurtful and they go, okay. Because once upon a time it was okay to be bigoted and hurtful.
Well, I mean, if they were that angry, then shouldn't they have been that angry by the other thing? And it kept,
Yep. So I did want to talk about that. So that I thought was very interesting. I wanted to point that out. And there was one other thing. I thought there was something else I wanted to talk about that had a little bit of controversy. But three cheers for them in the Parker Theater Company, or the Parker. This looks like a great theater. I looked it up. It didn't have a lot of Sasquatch Productions had very little.
Where in Colorado is it?
I'm trying. Let's see. Community Structure Musical Parker, Colorado.
I don't know where Parker, Colorado is.
I don't either. And this is what amazes me. This
not
is,
that I'm way up on my Colorado geography, but I know where some
when
of
I
the
toured
with Joffrey,
we played like we seemed like we played every little podunk town in Colorado. So I know a few, but
not that one.
But what I find interesting is I don't know where this town is. I don't know. It could be a suburb of Denver, which would make more sense. But this looked like a huge theater. Mm. So it can't be too much of a podunk town, right?
Mm. There's lots of big theaters all over.
Anybody have any insight?
No. Let's find out.
Let's do. We're not leaving the studio until we find out. Okay, let's talk about other junk. Let's talk about the Outsiders, shall we?
Recouping that money.
Recouped. And they are only the...
I was about to say, what, fourth Broadway?
Third.
Third in...
This season, and the only musical...
Yeah.
And actually, there's only been three other musicals in the last 6 years that have recouped.
Years.
And they were Six, MJ, and Anne Juliet. Mm. I find it interesting that MJ was one.
I don't.
Yeah, I don't know.
The pop culture of MJ.
Well, but it was so controversial when it opened. Mm.
It wasn't. But it still always sold out. And... Mm-hmm. Whether the controversy or not. And I think it's the same group of people that have had controversy with it were the same group then. It wasn't something new for MJ. So,
yep. Well, yeah.
But and Outsiders has been pulling in $2 million a week.
Yep.
So not surprised that they recouped in a year and a half.
Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And then now Just in Time is set to do it as well. Oh. But they also talked about, this is an article in the New York Times written by Michael Paulson that says, Broadway's new musicals keep losing money, except this one.
Mm-hmm.
But they talked about The Outsiders. Now, you saw it here, right?
I saw the original cast in New York.
Oh, you saw it in New York.
And then I saw it.
You saw it here,
we had it on tour, so I saw it on tour, too.
Yeah.
So it's so freaking great. There's so many things to say about it. But I'm going to say this. This cast in this tour, I enjoyed more than the cast in New York. I also think them being younger makes a big difference, but there's something about their energy collectively that is a whole different that I left even more invigorated. That rumble scene is just chef's kiss of staging.
That's your second chef's kiss today.
It is.
Beautiful.
As Mr. Food used to say, ooh, it's so good.
I miss Mr. Food. I do not know
who
that is.
He's a little dude up in New York on the TV. If you Google Mr. Food, you'll love his videos.
I
He's fantastic. Ooh, it's so good.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. One of the things that the director, who is Danya Taymor, said as she was putting it together, she said she made two early decisions. Quote, she suggested removing all the adult characters to focus on a world of unsupervised adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
And then parentheses, it says, there's still a police officer, but Taymor said she imagines him as young too.
Yeah, it's not really.
And also seizing on the centrality of brawling in the story. She wanted to integrate dancing and fighting. a lot. So
it's really, really beautifully done.
It was originally set to start in at the Goodman prior to the pandemic.
In Chicago.
But the pandemic put a little kibosh on that.
Wrinkling.
And it ended up opening in 2023 at La Jolla Playhouse.
I should give a ATX shout out to Jamestown Revival, who wrote the music, that live here.
Okay.
Originally grew up in the outside of Houston.
Okay.
But they are located here.
Yeah. I don't know who they are.
They're the people who wrote the music Outsiders.
Well, now I know that part. Have either of y'all seen The Outsiders?
I haven't seen it. No, I really wanted to, but I haven't been able to.
Stephen, you live in New York.
I live in New
York. And what is your excuse?
Thankfully, I've been employed.
So. He was on Broadway.
What is that like?
So there's a lot of good things I haven't been able to see yet. Yeah. But I was in the revival of Cabaret, and across the street was MJ, and every night, even into their fourth year, there was a line around the block of people waiting to get in. Mm-hmm. So that just lets you know there's something that is appealing about it.
That Michael Jackson could have gone somewhere.
Maybe. I'm still mad at him. He passed away on my birthday.
Okay. Mm. So you actually sent me an article, which I had already had in the lineup to do, because we did talk about this.
We
talked
about it, but they expanded more from what we talked about.
No, we haven't. This is new.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's an expansion on it.
Yes, we talked about the issue. And the issue is what?
That they are no longer putting little sheets inside your program to let you know who the standby is or the understudy or who is going in for who on that performance or role. It's up to you to read the board.
Nor are they doing the pre-show announcement.
Correct.
And that angers me.
So it's up to That's you insane. To either read the board and
right.
do your math and investigating to figure out who's replacing who that night.
Is the reason just for budget?
And also they're giving like QR codes so you can look up stuff.
I'm sure it's budget. But what has happened up until this point is the QR code leads you to a program that gives you the cast list, but it does not say you have to then
still
look at your program and say, okay, well, this is who I was expecting, especially unless you know who it is.
But
now Playbill is coming out with a new thing called Playbill. At this Playbill.
@thisplaybill.com, and then it's a backslash and a lot of show title names.
Except I tried it and it doesn't work.
One of the links worked for me, so I wonder if it went down.
Well, I only tried two of them. I tried Chicago and I tried Oh Mary, because they seemed the least amount. I wanted a one word thing because I didn't know whether you had to put any. So, but I just got a thing that said, you need a QR code. You need to scan a QR code. So I don't know what it looks like. I'm hoping in this Playbill thing, it says.
It looked, the images of it.
The actor normally playing this is not in this character play.
The image looked exactly like the printout sheet did. Today, this performance, the role is being played by with the headshot and the bio, similar to how it is in the Playbill.
Well, good. So I totally approve. And so it has. It soft launched last year with three Broadway shows, and that was Oh Mary, Stranger Things, and Wicked. And it now serves also the Buena Vista Show, Social Club, Chess, Hadestown, your favorite show, MJ the Musical, Moulin Rouge, and Operation Mincemeat. And in February, they're going to add Anne Juliet. Oh, that's why Chicago hasn't been added yet. Later in February, we're going to get The Great Gatsby and maybe Happy Ending.
Maybe.
See what I did there?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for laughing.
But I was excited to see how many shows expanded. I had heard that they were working on this, but I wasn't sure.
Yep. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
I think it's
And I wonder if it's going
fantastic.
To be just Broadway, or will they do the Broadway tours as well? Or are the Broadway tours going to be the way they're doing it now?
I believe it's in conversation.
Okay. You would know. Hmm. I will tell you this. Liza came into the news today.
Liza with a Z.
It is Liza
Not
with a
Lisa
Z.
Liza with an S.
She's teamed up with an AI company called 11.
She's gearing up for her new biography coming out.
Okay, well, let's talk about this story
this
instead.
This is why. I'm just letting you know this is all tied in.
She created new music using artificial intelligence. And so this is an album which evidently is out, but I couldn't find it, that features material music that is AI generated, sung by the artist. But they're also recreating, they say they're, it also has AI performances of Art Garfunkel and Michael Feinstein, amongst others. So I don't, how do y'all feel about that?
It's very weird. So she did this whole thing last week. It was last week that she re-released her new, her old single that she did, Pet Shop Boys. I don't know if you remember that back in the 80s when she did the Pet Shop Boys single. So then that came out and she alluded to the whole AI and she had more music coming out. I'm telling you, the woman's everywhere. She's throwing her book in between.
Well, take Liza out of the equation. How do we feel about this?
It's not the vocals, I don't think. I think it's just the
music. It is just the music, but yeah. It's AI. How do we feel about it?
I mean, I have mixed feelings about it because I think the AI can be a great tool to help you achieve different levels of creativity, but I also think that it can then replace the exact thing that you're trying to create. And that's where I have a conflict within myself, because I would never use AI to actually help me come up with lines for a script that I'm writing or a libretto or something. But I may use it to say, hey, what does this word mean in what context? You know, could I use it? So it's almost like a dictionary kind of relationship with AI. And so I think it seems problematic just because the further that we go in this direction, the more that it will be accepted. And, you know, we've already seen with actors, AI actors being created and things like that.
I forgot her name, the AI actor that's out there.
Tilly
Norwood is getting representation.
And there's 35 more being generated by that same company.
That's why Matthew McConaughey trademarked his name and everything and his likeness so that it couldn't be used in AI. It's interesting with music. I don't use AI. It drives me nuts. But it's interesting with music because even starting in the 80s with sampling and doing things electronically, it almost was AI in its own sense in the way beats and music and replaying. It was just people pressing buttons, but it was kind of a very rudimentary, like a dot system computer almost, of AI. So is this the same or not the same? I don't know.
Well, in theory, the music is created by AI. Therefore, whoever either originally created that music, and then certainly any players that were going to be playing that music, these people all lost.
It's drawing from already existing material.
Yeah.
And so that's where the conflict lies.
And we're going to have to figure it out because it's going to be a fact of our lives, but we're just going to have to figure out.
Oh, AI in general needs to be fixed. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of scary. And we all, you know, when we first started talking about all the artists, we were all saying, well, they can't replace artists, but evidently they can.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just not, I mean, it's not being regulated. And so that's part of the issue, I think. It's just a free-for-all.
Yep. Scary.
It's interesting. They'll figure it out. I mean, working on the whole when we didn't know about digital music and digital rights management and Napster coming out and not having the iTunes, it only had the Real Player versus Windows. I got to work on all of that. And that was another completely uncharted territory.
Totally.
That
I was there for that era. And I was
we figured it out.
Yeah. Well, we haven't figured it out yet. I mean, it's still not completely figured
out. It's not fair. It's figured out to a sense, but I don't think it was a fair outcome.
Correct.
In everything.
Correct. Artists aren't terribly happy about it.
I mean, they're happy that their music's not being pirated. They're not happy in the contracts that they have within the labels.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they get what.
Which are still two different things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Speaking about Just In Time, which is going to
change the people up.
It's going to change the people up. It's not where I was going, but that's where I was going.
Oh, well, they're changing up the cast.
It's going to recoup is where I was going.
Yes.
They are changing up the cast. Jonathan Groff is leaving.
He's saying,
somebody named Jeremy Jordan is taking over.
He is.
Looking forward. How do we feel about Jeremy Jordan doing that? We good?
Yeah.
I think he'll do a good job.
Totally good.
I saw him in Floyd Collins. I just think his voice is amazing. And his charisma. He just has
A buttery voice. He does.
So I can't imagine he's going to be anything but a good replacement for Jonathan Groff.
Agreed. Agreed.
That's where I was like, that's a, it's not just vocally, but energetically, and with what you need is an actor to be on there doing that. I was like, ah, who's going to go in next?
Yeah. Yep.
Jeremy Jordan.
All right. Well, let's take a little break and we'll go away listening to Jonathan Groff singing a signature song from Bobby Darin, A Little Mac the Knife, who I just have to say before I do it, I toured upstate New York in 1980-something, and the cast all lived in this house, and there was a bar, and every night we went there and we played Bobby Darin, Mac the Knife on the jukebox. And by the end of it, we all knew all of his little signature eeps and oops. And so I chose a section of the song that I particularly
like.
That
liked. You like the eeps and the oops?
I like to sing. We will be right back. Down by the river, don't you know? We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. I could have talked forever.
Yes.
As usual.
Lots of stuff. We didn't even get everything.
We didn't even get other stuff. But folks can go to offstageonair.com once we post the show.
Actually, we got more than we normally do.
Yeah, we did pretty good.
Yeah, we did.
But let's reintroduce our guests for the real reason they're here.
Bom, bom.
And this is Austin Opera's production of Fiddler on the Roof, one of my favorites. And we are so lucky to have the director here, Crystal Manish. Hi.
Hi.
And the star, Stephen Skybell.
Hello.
Am I pronouncing your last name right?
Skybell.
Sky Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I watched some YouTube and they pronounced it Sky Bell. And in my mind, it was Skybull. I knew I was going to do that wrong.
Oh, good.
And then we also have here from Austin Opera. I don't know what your title is. Director of Marketing.
Yes, that's correct.
Director of Marketing, Daniel Acosta. Hi, Daniel.
He's keeping us in line.
Somebody's got to, from what I hear. This show, Fiddler on the Roof. What's it about?
It's about we get the point of view of one man named Tevye, and it's a look inside a world that is unfamiliar to us in modern day, which is a shtetl in what was Russia, its current day Ukraine, in around 1905. And it's about changing traditions and how you as much as you resist change, it happens with or without your consent. And it's we see Tevye going through a journey where his daughters are all discovering the what is becoming the more modern world, and he's trying to keep his foothold on the roof, as it were, to stay up there and not fall down. And with that comes a lot of I think trials and tribulations, but also a lot of comedy, because life inherently is funny. And so it's a beautiful show and about community as well.
Yeah. And I'd say, what's it about? I'd be very surprised if our listeners aren't aware of what it looks like.
Lisa and I talk about it.
it's one of our favorites. As our listeners know, it's like the very first Broadway show I ever saw, and it's very dear to my heart. And Stephen, you are a veteran of this show.
Yeah.
How many different productions have you been in?
Well, I haven't really counted, but let's count now, shall we? When I was 17, I played Tevye National Music Camp Interlochen, Michigan.
I saw that you went to Interlochen. Yeah. My mother tried to get me to go to Interlochen.
You didn't want
to
go?
I did. Well, I didn't know anything about it.
And I begged. I grew up in Lubbock, Texas, and I begged my parents to let me go. And at that time, it was an 8-week summer camp.
Yeah.
So it was a big journey. Anyway, I played Tevye and I got Best Actor. So that was my first foray into the role. Then in college, I played Tevye again at 21. Then I was looking for an opportunity to play Tevye when I got a little older. It just never happened. I then played Laser Wolf in the 2016 Broadway revival with Danny Burstein. Yep. I don't know if anyone saw it.
Nobody saw it.
We all saw it.
I saw it. I assume I saw you in it.
Yes.
Maybe. I only replaced for a summer of 3 months. But
yeah, that's when I went.
Then I had the great good fortune, although I didn't know it at the time, to be cast in Joel Grey's Yiddish version of Fiddler on the Roof. And at that time, I thought, well, I finally got cast as Tevye, but it's in Yiddish. And who's going to see that? It was only meant to
Who
run
Who did
for,
it, yeah. right?
I remember they kept right. extending.
It was only to be a 6-week run downtown, and it went on for ultimately 2 years.
Wow.
Producers moved us uptown, and then there was to be a national tour. We were supposed to go to China all at the time that COVID hit.
Yeah.
China said to us, we can't host you at this time without any explanation. And then a month later, we found out why.
I'm
happy to say that we will be reviving it in this summer in Toronto. And then there are plans in the workings to do it in Los Angeles next year. So there's life in it yet.
So I had a question. Did you speak Yiddish prior to getting the show, or did you have a working knowledge of Yiddish?
I had studied some Yiddish. I was bar mitzvahed in Lubbock, Texas, and I knew that
Jewish population in Lubbock.
Yeah, it's not uncommon to Anatevka. It was 100 Jewish family, a very tight-knit 100 Jewish families when I grew up. And I knew I didn't want to ever lose my knowledge of the Hebrew letters, and I knew that Yiddish used the Hebrew letters. So my brother and I, in our maturity, thought, well, why don't we try and learn Yiddish together over the phone to keep the letters alive for us? And then I ended up studying with a woman at her home. She was a professor of Yiddish at Northwestern, but she didn't have a large enough attendance for a semester class that time that I was there. So she offered to teach me in her home. So I had enough Yiddish to tell my agent to tell them that I speak Yiddish, which was not true. But I had heard my grandparents in Lubbock, Texas speaking Yiddish in order to keep what they were saying secret from us. So I had heard Yiddish. And I had learned a little Yiddish, but I certainly wasn't proficient in it. But
amazing. Yeah. And I don't want to spend so much time talking about this production, but I do have just a follow up question, if I may, because I was wondering about this, because I would assume that the majority or many people in the cast did not speak Yiddish.
Correct.
And I know I'm probably there because it was a Yiddish theater Volksbühne.
The Volksbühne, national Yiddish.
So
theater.
I'm assuming some of those actors were.
Only three. Okay. Three actors had Yiddish from birth.
So were you just were most of the actors doing transliterations and just learning out?
The Volksbühne, the Yiddish theater, has it down to a science to get you up on Yiddish. So they had sound tapes for all of our parts. We had three Yiddish. We only had 3 weeks to get this together initially.
Seriously? Wow,
and
amazing.
So we had three Yiddish coaches who were constantly correcting our Yiddish. And I'll just say they let us know that the Yiddish attending audience would have no problem correcting our Yiddish from their seats.
I was about to say, because your audience will definitely
be like, we were scared to make sure that our Yiddish was going to pass the test.
Was there any problematic word that you, like, was there something that you just had problems with that just you just
there
kept
just
screwing
there
up?
Was a lot. There was a lot. I mean, you know, it's just a language with a lot of consonants in a row, you know.
Amazing. Well, I promise we're going to get to this particular production because that's why we're here. But I also wanted to talk to Crystal a little bit because, oh my God, your work, I looked at your reel. Your work is amazing looking.
Thank you.
I haven't seen it, but the visually breathtaking.
Thank you so much.
Breathtaking.
Yeah.
Just amazing. I want to get inside your head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love approaching. I've always had a strong visual sense since I was a kid. And music always made me see images, colors, and emotion, obviously. Even when I didn't know, like when I discovered opera when I was 15, I had no idea what they were singing about, but I had ideas as to what it should look like. And so I've latched onto that as an advantage. And so I drive a lot of my production work with lighting. Lighting, like a good edit of a film, tells the audience where to look, what to think, how to feel.
I like that. I'm going to steal that if that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
I was just saying, I love that.
Yeah, there's just a direct correlation to the cut and
100%.
To the lighting cue. And so my shows really rely heavily on lighting, with the scenery much more abstract, generally speaking, because I think that the theater is a place where we should be, whether it's opera or musical theater, it's one and the same, where we're watching people. up there, and they always have to be real people, even in a fantasy, fantastical story. We're mm-hmm. seeing people within some kind of world that we're being transported to. So I'd like to focus on people and lighting.
Truly beautiful. Now, most of your work, I think, is in the opera world.
Yes.
And opera tends to be on a scale much larger than even Broadway in a yeah. lot of ways. Mm-hmm. It's just big. And have you also done more intimate work in more intimate settings?
Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of intimate operas, like the Baroque era, a lot of 17th and 18th century opera. It's sort of my jam because there's so much required of the director to figure out, because it's a dramatic dramaturgical nightmare. Usually the Baroque librettos, but they're fantastic stories, and you have to be clever about, well, back in the day they would have had a chariot descend, so in lieu of that, what do we do at the end of Rinaldo, you know? So it's I find that work to be, and that work is very intimate because those Baroque operas were written for intimate spaces. And I've also done some plays as well. I did a world premiere of a play called Return to Sender for the Nashville Children's Theater in 2019.
Oh, how fun.
And, it, you know, staged, it was a very difficult story. It's about immigration and kids coming from Mexico, but it was an incredible experience.
Amazing. Well, let's talk about Fiddler on the Roof that's happening at Austin Opera. Now, again, just opera versus musical theater. We tend to talk about theater. We don't talk so much about opera, but I think most of us, I know I do, I have a very specific view about what each of those genres are. Yeah. And Fiddler on the Roof sort of fits in that versus A Poor Game Best, which Fiddler fits more in musical theater to me. Is this particular production treated more like an opera or more like musical theater or a hybrid?
I think it's a hybrid because it's still, you know, people have asked me a lot, is it the same show? And I said, yeah, of course, it's the same show. Yeah, no, it's the same show that we know and love, but the difference is that we use the full orchestration, which on Broadway now you don't have anymore, mm-hmm. and it's because of budget. And that's, I find that to be really unfortunate about the Broadway situation. But it's something that in opera we really pride ourselves on, is the lush use of orchestra and, of course, voices. And we have a combination of opera singers and musical theater types in this production, which I love because I think it really brings, everyone can learn something from each other.
It's kind of a fun and new energy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everyone has to learn how to work together, and it's a really great collaborative environment.
It's interesting because, one, it's the show, but it's sort of on dramatic steroids, you know, because it just, the sound of it, the size of it, the look of it, I can't wait to see the lights of it, and the chorus, you know. So a shtetl, I don't know how many are in the chorus, do you?
Yeah, we have about 20.
Okay, so yeah.
That's a manageable size.
It's a lot of people, and you
plus
really,
all the other characters too, so sure. there's a lot
it's
of people singing.
It is.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, I know, you know, I go to people, I'm like, so are you opera or are you musical theater? Because it's you can't really tell. Everyone is singing so beautifully, and certainly the music is beautifully sung, but you can't tell. I mean, with the exception of me, because I am not an operatic singer, but the singing is the singing, yeah. And it's the music is being so well served by everybody, whether they are basically musically theater trained or operatically trained.
And I know some of our favorites. I had traded an email with Robert Ferris the other day, who is in it, along yeah. with his wife, Barbara Chisholm.
Right.
And he told me this is just the third time they've performed together.
So, isn't that wild?
Wow, that's crazy.
40
yeah.
years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that is great. I forgot who he's playing. Is he
Laser Wolf?
He's playing Laser Wolf. Yeah. Is he any good?
He's very good. No, I mean, that's the other thing is, you know, I wanted to come do this. I met with Crystal earlier in the year, and I have to say, of all the fiddlers I've done, this is the first female director that I've worked with. And
amazing.
It's a play about this man surrounded by women.
Powerful women.
Yes. And so it's really been so wonderful to have a woman lead the helm and bring such amazing touches all along the way, that it's not to say a man couldn't have thought of that, but I feel like Crystal has really given a lot of thought to these daughters and to the mother. And so there's but even things that don't have to do with the women, there's just incredible detail that she has brought to the production. But also, I forgot what I was going to say.
No, but it was important. So we're running out of time, but I wanted to ask Daniel, Austin Opera is doing this. I cannot think of a time since I've lived in Austin for a little over 20 couple of years that they have done a musical like this. Why do a musical and why now? And why Fiddler?
Again,
30
you know,
seconds or less.
The opera stage is scalable and size, right? Yep. So we can do those things. It's not uncommon nowadays for opera companies to be doing musicals. Met Opera's doing West Side Story,
correct,
stuff like that. So Austin Opera did Sweeney Todd a couple years ago from Sondheim. It was really well received.
Oh,
from the audience.
I remember that.
I think we did.
Yeah.
They did Sweeney Todd.
Great. So it's a way to bring in new audiences. It's a really wonderful story. It's storytelling. At the end of the day, it's the same thing as opera storytelling. And, mm-hmm. and you know, we're there to provide the story to people in Austin. And I think that the story of Fiddler on the Roof is very relevant today. I think
it's so good.
Sadly relevant.
Sadly
relevant.
I think
yeah.
people love the music, and so it's going to be a really great production, and we're excited to be able to bring it to Austin.
Wonderful. I would like to say to our listening audience, we're going to give away some tickets, and if you're listening to the podcast, you can do this as well. If you want to email me, so we're going to give it to you two different ways. Email me, Lisa at offstageonair.com. And I will take the first two emails. You get two free tickets on which nights, Daniel?
Opening night, Thursday, February 5th, and Friday, February 6th.
And then also, the first two people in on, we don't have Instagram, I guess we should, on our Facebook page.
Well, yeah, we should have an Instagram.
We do.
We'll get on that.
I don't understand Instagram, and that's my fault.
Oh, that one I understand. It's the
anyway,
TikTok I don't.
Okay. So two people on email, two people on social media, and you'll get a couple of tickets to see Fiddler on the Roof and Stephen Skybell's incredible performance. So give us the dates. When does it open?
Thursday, February 5th. We are running Friday, February 6th, Saturday the 7th, and close on Sunday the 8th.
Wonderful. And you're at the Long Center?
Correct.
At
the Long Center.
Stage.
On the big
pretty
stage.
Stage.
On the Dell stage. And where can folks go to get more information?
We saw Liza there together.
We did.
You can go to austinopera.org for details.
Great.
All the information will be there.
Wonderful. Well, thank you guys. I could talk forever.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you all for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Okay, that was Stephen Skybell, Crystal Manick, See, the more I think about it, the worse it gets. And Daniel Acosta of Austin Opera's production of Fiddler on the Roof, February 5th through 8th at the Long Center. For more information, austinopera.org. And you didn't think you were going to hear this, but let's listen to Stephen Skybell sing Havala, which I have to tell you, I've told this to a lot of people, no matter what production of Fiddler I see, the worst community theater production at all. At this point in the show,
I am in
tears.
You've
never seen it the way you're going to see it
this
time.
Well, I can't wait. Well, thank you. You should put some towels under my seat. We'll be right back. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. I could have kept talking forever.
Yeah. Well, don't have a problem with talking.
No, but I mean, they're
fun people.
Their pedigree was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was.
And you know what? Our next guest's pedigree is equally
pretty cool. Because today we have a cool episode.
Yeah. So we are talking to the folks from Austin Playhouse and their show, Describe the Night. And we have on the show today Laura Toner Haddock.
You did it.
It's hard to say, Laura.
Everything's hard, Lisa.
I know. And Brennan Patrick.
Hello.
Laura, are you directing? Oh, no, it's Ben is directing.
Ben Wolf is directing.
You're in it, though.
Yeah. Okay. Brennan and I are
and
cast
Brennan
members.
So this is a Rajiv Joseph piece.
Mm-hmm.
Can one of you tell us what the show is about?
Sure. It's so this won the Obie Award in 2018 for Best American Play, and it is an epic historical thriller. It takes place in Russia, Soviet and post-Soviet Russia. Starts in 1920, goes through 2010. It takes a lot of actual historical events and adds some fantastic elements to it. And basically, It's an epic story of seven people navigating an authoritarian state.
Good. I'm glad I'm not the only
one. I'm so there with you.
Sounds amazing. And tell us about your roles. Brennan, who are you playing?
I'm playing a man named Vova. He's a Stasi agent. He works for the KGB in Soviet Russia. His first assignment is to spy on his boss's granddaughter.
Yikes.
A risky situation. And wouldn't you know it, he starts developing, what would you call it, love or lust for this subject, and it goes off the rails. He also may or may not be based on a historical into current day figure that you may or may not be familiar with. No spoilers, though.
Okay. You can spoil that one.
Who is it?
We say it in the press release. Vladimir Putin.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Yep.
So I'll be taking my crack at that guy.
And that's you?
Yes, yeah. That's me.
Okay. You got height on him.
You're no longer invited in the studio. Laura, who are you playing?
So I play a journalist named Maria who... in 2010, because people's stories in the play are in different time periods. So I'm in 2010, and this is a true event. There was a airplane crashed in Smolensk, in killing the president of Poland, his wife, and about 80 cabinet members.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's there at the time and thinks that because she's not a super political reporter, she's going to be protected and won't get caught up in everything going on. And she's wrong.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Sure.
So. It's interesting. I'm actually sort of steeped in the era right now because I went during the ice storm, I binged Ponies.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people in the cast are watching that right
now.
Well,
yeah.
It's so funny because when I was the other day, the commercial came on again. I forgot I had watched it. And I was like, oh, this is very similar in the same vein.
Especially people that did not grow up in the Soviet era as I did. So mm-hmm. I came of age in the middle of all that stuff. So it was very, I understand it. But I mentioned somebody to, I was talking to a young person not that long ago and said something about the USSR. And their head tilted like my dogs do. And I said, you don't know it. And I said, it's Soviet Russia. And they didn't know. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know nothing about the Soviet bloc, which I found interesting.
It was funny. Morgan just asked me recently, so didn't you live through the Cold War? What was that like? And I was all like, whoa, it seems so like yesterday. But yeah.
So is this show Describe the Night? Would you classify it as a comedy?
I'd classify it as a drama. I would personally. There is humor in it, as there has to be. Always is, even in the darkest time. My character flat out tells a joke in the show. Like,
oh, good.
There's a joke.
And we all dutifully laugh every time she does it.
You're not even on stage.
Does it start with a rabbi and a priest walk into a bar?
It does not.
Darn it. Well, that's awesome. Y'all, I hear you're going to do a little scene. Yes?
We can. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
So this is actually closer to the end of the play, but this is Vova is interrogating my character.
Wonderful. This is Laura Toner-Haddock and Brennan Patrick doing a scene from Austin Playhouse's production of Describe the Night.
Tokarieva M. First name Maria. Journalist.
What are you? Why are you? What do you?
Shh.
Mr. President, I...
Shh. There's no need to use this honorific, Mr. President. So stuffy. Of course, I am the president, and so it's not inappropriate. And I do appreciate your formality, even under duress. But you could call me any number of things. My friends call me Vova. We have a box filled with your possessions, taken from you upon your arrest for littering.
I didn't litter.
Bus pass, lip balm, cash, a .38 caliber pistol, handcuffs with keys, nail file, a laptop computer that has curiously, suspiciously, even, been erased of any information, cleaned out, and a condom, but no photo ID. Paints quite a picture. One last thing. This, a very, very old book, a unique book. How do you have it? Silence. I respect silence. This is a very old room. In the 1930s and 1940s, this was called a confessional booth, as a joke. But today it is no longer an operational precinct. People are no longer brought here for questioning. You are special. You are special, aren't you? Do you know what this book is?
No.
Oh, and isn't it interesting? First there was silence, a wall of silence offered by you, and now there is no. Isn't it interesting I didn't even have to use techniques? Do you know what I mean by this term, techniques? It's a fancy word for something not so fancy. Techniques, do you know what this word means?
Yes.
And now yes. Again, without techniques. Yes. Techniques have taught us one absolute truth. Would you like to know what it is, this absolute truth? Everyone speaks. Do you think you're going to die today? Answer yes or no.
No.
Good. I agree with you. Nobody wants anyone to die. Of course, many people have died. In this room, so many people. But back then, things were much, much, much different than they are today. Back then, the head of the NKVD, a monster named Nikolai Yezhov, once proclaimed that it would be better that 10 innocent men died than one traitor go free. Hardly a sustainable justice, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, that's chilling.
Yeah.
Chilling.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to see this.
So, and that's the book that he references at the very beginning is kind of one of our touchstones throughout the play. It travels from 1920 when we first see it through 2010.
Is it Good Night Moon?
It's spoilers, Lisa, spoilers. We're trying to preserve some mystery here. No, it's actually the diary of Russian writer Isaac Babel, who's a real historical figure who was briefly, what is they call it, unpersoned, and then he was repersoned in 1953.
So erased from all public records in Russia at the time.
And Nikolai Yezhov, there's a very famous photograph of him, who is the head of the NKVD, with Putin. And in one, you see him there, the actual picture, and then not Putin, with Stalin. Oh. Mm-hmm. And he was erased from all the historical records.
Amazing.
Just photoshopped out.
Yeah, it's amazing. We
they did that a lot over there, actually, back in the Catherine the Great days.
Yeah, they did, and it seems incomparable to that's not the right word. It seems crazy to us, but it happens. Mm-hmm. I would venture to guess it happens here
everywhere.
Too.
Yeah, I was about to say I don't think they're the only ones.
Yeah, yeah. That's me. The show sounds amazing. We're kind of running out of time. What else, what other little tidbits would y'all like to share with us before we have to go?
We have an amazing cast, Toby Miner, Stephen Mercantile, Alyssa Hurtado, Andrea Ginder, myself and Brennan Patrick. And for more information, folks can just go to our website, austinplayhouse.com.
That's wonderful. When do you open?
We open on Friday and we run through February 22nd.
And
it'd be
that's
cool to get
Friday the
people
30th?
In the audience. Mm-hmm.
Okay. 31st is it?
The 31st.
31st.
I have the total wrong dates on here.
Am I wrong?
I think it's the 30th.
I have the 30th.
I'm probably wrong.
The 20th.
You're right. Or I don't.
30th
know.
Through 22nd.
Yes.
30th through the 22nd. So we're all
final
a little
answer.
Bit right.
Yes.
With all our powers combined.
Well, thank y'all so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
This
thank
is
you.
Your first time for this year, correct?
Yes.
Mazel tov, as we say. And best wishes on the show.
Thank you.
And I'm looking forward to seeing it. It seems amazing.
It's fun, may not be exactly the right word, but it's epic and very moving and a beautiful piece.
Well, that scene was chilling. So, it seems like it piqued my interest. Wonderful. That was Laura Toner Haddock and Brennan Patrick of Austin Playhouse production of Describe the Night, opening January 30th, closes February 22nd. For more information, you may visit austinplayhouse.com. This is the wrong time era, but I had to do it.
It's my favorite from
for
the
you.
Show. Hi, thank
we'll
you.
Be right back. In 19th century Russia, we are back. You're listening to Lisa and Nicole, and we don't have time to say goodbye.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. That was real fun. We didn't get to our local section. You can find information on most of the local stuff that I talked about at atxtheater.org. Or at offstageonair.com. We'll post all that stuff. I was going to play something from Serafina, which is in Today in Theater History. It opened on this date.
Oh,
so we didn't get to play
good
that.
Music from that.
Yeah.
We'll find another time to play Serafina.
I do want
to
just mention Zach is opening Murder on the Orient Express. It's opened Murder on the... No, yes.
Just opened last Wednesday.
It's scheduled for the 25th.
But it had some canceled shows with Dice.
But word on the street on that one is pretty good. So certainly I've seen the visuals of the set, which looks amazing.
Yeah, the train has like trainography. Yeah. It's like...
There's trainography.
I but love mystery.
There's no splash zone.
There is no splash zone. Right.
I love a blood budget and a splash zone.
We do love a blood budget. Who's got the splash zone right now?
So for some reason, I am after seeing six, I keep wanting to, six just keeps in here and so entering
is
into
like
my...
Is it like an earworm?
I think so. So we're going to play from that. But what is interesting is when I wrote this in the script, did you see what I said the play was that the song is from?
Yeah, I was like, interesting.
What is it?
It says that you wrote one.
I went one.
Instead of six.
Instead of six.
You're just picking a number.
Anyway,
you're stuck with a number.
This is Anne Boleyn's, who I think is my favorite character on the show, singing Don't Lose Your Head. We'll see you next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Oh, by the way, this is from, and this I don't know that it's ever been done before, the cast album, the Broadway cast album of Six was produced live on opening night.
Isn't that cool?
And that I don't think has ever been done before.
So I don't know, but I think it's cool.
Here it is. Don't lose your head. We'll see you next week.
Sorry, not sorry about what I said. I'm just trying to have some fun.